Hello and welcome to Smarter, a podcast by clinicians for clinicians, brought to you by Mater, an Australian leader in healthcare for more than a century. My name is Glenn Minturn and I'm excited to join you as we meet some of our clinicians and deep dive into specialty areas from across Mackay and Townsville. Today, I'm coming to you from Uwiburra, the land on which this podcast is recorded. And I'm incredibly fortunate to be joined by Dr. Ritu Rana, obstetrician and gynaecologist at Mater Private Hospital in Mackay. Dr. Rana is a fellow of the Royal Australian College of Obstetricians and Gynaecologists and a member of the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynaecologists in the United Kingdom. She has more than 15 years of experience in obstetrics and gynaecology, with a special interest in advanced laparoscopic surgery, infertility, and high-risk obstetrics, along with the management of labour. In 2023, Dr. Rana became the first specialist to perform robotic-assisted hysterectomies in Mackay, and today, Dr. Rana is joining us to talk about the role of surgical assist robots in minimally invasive hysterectomies.
We are Marta.
We are Marta.
We are Marta.
This is Smarter.
Ritu, welcome to this edition of Smarter.
Thanks very much.
You've got a special interest and vast experience in fertility. Do you see a big demand for these treatments in Mackay and the Whitsundays?
Yes, I was actually surprised how much the effect of infertility issues are present in this area. I think it's on a rise all over the world anyway. Some of the reasons could be women choosing to have children at a slightly later age, the increasing prevalence of endometriosis in the female population, once again age-related as well, polycystic ovaries, overweight, stressful jobs for men, drugs, smoking. So it is a big burden on the society at the moment. And one in six couples on an average seek help for fertility issues.
One in six? That's incredible. Is that getting higher?
When I started working in Ops and Gynae nearly 15 years ago, we were told one in 10, but the new data says one in six.
A University of New South Wales report into assisted reproductive technology in Australia and New Zealand revealed one in every 18 babies in Australia in 2021 were born as a result of fertility treatments. The report, released in September 2023, is based on data collected by 95 accredited IVF clinics and submitted to the Australia and New Zealand Assisted Reproduction Database.
Now, it's probably the most commonly known as a treatment for certain cancers or endometriosis, but what exactly are the breadth of conditions that it may resolve?
So hysterectomy means removing the uterus. It's a big decision. It has to be done for conditions, as you mentioned, cancer, to treat it. It is also used for treatment of endometriosis, especially the ones causing life-changing problems like pain, heavy bleeding, painful sex. Obviously, it is a definitive decision and women can't have children after a hysterectomy. So it is done once they know that they have finished having children. It's one of the important reasons for hysterectomy, but the other reasons are heavy menstrual bleeding, very painful periods that cannot be treated by other less invasive techniques, fibroids, so tumors of the uterus that are causing problems like heavy bleeding, pain, pressure, going to the toilet repeatedly, for precancer conditions of the uterus and cervix. And there is a condition called adenomyosis, which means endometriosis in the muscles of the uterus, which sometimes needs hysterectomy for its treatment, for its symptoms.
So let's talk about the cross-section in Mackay and the Whitsundays. What does that look like? Do you see a percentage of patients with all of these conditions considering hysterectomies for treatment?
In Mackay, Whitsunday, and generally anywhere, people are quite accepting to treatments that would improve their quality of life. Women are becoming more independent. They are out and about doing jobs that are physically quite involving. They work in the mines, drive trucks, drive trains, and they want a better quality of life. When they know that they have tried everything and this would help with their condition. They are quite accepting of the treatment. So when we have tried everything and this looks like is the final or the last resort for them, about I think about 80 to 90% women are open to going ahead with hysterectomies.
Let's talk about how you've maybe seen hysterectomies evolve, particularly over the last few decades. Has it been small steps or dramatic steps over that time?
I would say probably dramatic steps. So when I started working in Ops and Gynae in 2004, we were transitioning from doing open hysterectomies to laparoscopic hysterectomies more commonly. At the start, especially in the generation before me, I would say 10, 15 years before I started working in the specialty, most hysterectomies were done with an open cut in the abdomen, wow, in the tummy. It could be an up and down cut or a side to side. We had to put big metal devices to keep the tissues out of the way so we could see what we are doing, which could have an impact, a huge impact on pain after the operation. They would be in a fair bit of pain and will need pain relief for weeks. There would be more blood loss. Sometimes they would have impact on their nerves and could cause, transient or a permanent damage sometimes to the nerves as well. And within a few years of me starting in the specialty, we started working with the laparoscope with the keyhole and started learning to do laparoscopic hysterectomies, which made a big difference in the outcome. Much less blood loss, very clear view of what we are doing, quicker recovery. Patients are up and about the next day after the operation and much quicker recovery and return to work. In the last few years in particular for general gynecology, but it has been used for 15 years for cancer surgery in gynecology, is the Da Vinci robot. So the robot is a step ahead from laparoscopic hysterectomy. The advantage of using the robot is the fact that we can see what we are doing much, much, much precisely. So the precision in surgery is huge. The other big impact is that we can work under lower pressures in the abdomen. So whereas in a traditional keyhole laparoscopic surgery, we would work at a pressure of 15 millimeters of mercury, would work on 8 millimeters of mercury with the robot.
Wow.
And from what I've seen in the last few months, the first thing the patients come back and tell me after the operation is, I had no pain, which is great.
So minimally invasive techniques, we are hearing more and more about it. You talk about it there. Those benefits are also have got to be so much better to the patient's recovery and future outcomes.
Absolutely. Yeah. In the long term, less chance of adhesion formation, scar tissue formation, less long term impact on sexual life, quicker recovery, back to work, less impact financially on them.
A 2022 International Journal of Gynecological Cancer article found patients undergoing minimally invasive hysterectomies through laparoscopic or robotic approaches for benign or malignant conditions can be discharged the same day without any increase in 30-day post-operative complications or readmission rates. However, it did recognise that the length of surgery, any underlying health conditions, and the use of narcotics could extend a patient's length of stay.
Ritu, you talked about the Da Vinci robot, and congratulations on performing Mackay's first robotic assist hysterectomy last year. What do you think that means for the region to have access to these surgical assist robots locally here in North Queensland?
It means a great deal. Once again, to have an operation takes a lot of organization and planning, and it's a financial impact on the family and the person itself. On top of that, if they had to travel, arrange their accommodation there, pay for their travel, it is a further impact. And then the biggest impact is traveling back after an operation. So it is really good times that we can offer this surgery, robotic-assisted surgery in Mackay, rather than for the patients to need to travel to, let's say, Townsville or Brisbane for the surgery. So basically, robotic assisted surgery or any operation for that matter has three parts to it. There's a surgical console where the surgeon sits. The other one is a visual part of the surgery where we can see on the screen what's happening. And there's a patient part of the surgery where the robotic instruments are inside the patient's abdomen. The main functioning of the operation happens from the surgical console. So we sit in the corner of the room on this video game sort of console, if you like. We do all the movements and we can see what's happening inside patient's abdomen on that console with beautiful views. But what we do with our hands, the movement that we do with our hands on that console are actually translated into patient's abdomen. Mm-hmm. The moment we take the eyes off the console or our hands off the console, it freezes. So it's got very safe, a lot of safety features to it, where the moment you stop looking at the screen, it'll stop doing what it's meant to do.
Pretty amazing technology. Since that first operation you did with the robotic assist, you've done quite a few now. And I'm sure that number is going to continue to grow. Have you seen patient outcomes now differ from traditional procedures using this kind of technology?
There is a difference. The main one is, from the patient's perspective, much quicker recovery. So they are up and about. They all want to go home very next day or even that evening for that matter. And outcome-wise, every single patient has come back and said, "Doctor, I had no post-operative pain. It was great." So that's a really good feeling. From the surgeon's perspective, it's going to give the surgeon longevity of work. So on an average, we would stand about 10 hours a day to operate on a full day theater list. That has a huge impact on your body, neck, on your legs, knees. I won't be able to do this number of hours when I'm 60 or 65. But if you're sitting in the corner of a room on a comfortable console operating from there, I can see myself doing this till I'm cognitive enough.
Isn't that fantastic? When hysterectomies are for the treatment of endometriosis or cancer, does the way you operate impact the likelihood of the conditions recurring into the future?
So yes, is the quick answer. If we remove all visible disease, which is endometriosis, at the time of their hysterectomy or at the time of excision of endometriosis, even if it's without a hysterectomy, definitely has an impact, an immediate impact on pain relief and a long-term impact on the condition not coming back or a delay in coming back. So precision in surgery is quite important. With the cancer surgery, again, the same rule applies. The more cancer you can remove, anything visible that you remove, all the lymph nodes that are involved in the cancer, when you can remove them carefully and precisely, then the chance of it coming back is less.
A 2023 Royal Australasian College of Surgeons report outlined that in 2022, more than 3,080 robotic-assisted hysterectomies were completed nationwide. The same report identified gynecology as the third most common specialty for robotic-assisted surgeries behind urology and general surgery.
We're to four clinicians who may be considering becoming credentialed in robotic-assist surgeries. What sort of training did you undergo and what was the rough timeline for this occurring?
So the first step for someone who wants to do robotic-assisted surgery is to have very good laparoscopic surgery skills, and then you build upon them and go to learn the robotic skills. So if you feel that you are a good laparoscopic surgeon, then it should not be a very difficult route. On an average, I think if you dedicate your time towards it, probably 3 to 6 months, depending on how much time you can dedicate. It involves learning to going through some modules on a simulator. So that's the first step. It could take from a few weeks to several weeks, depending on the time and how quickly you can get through those modules. Once you pass all those modules, you have to go and work on a live animal model. So there are labs that are designed for it. Usually one day full work is enough to get through what you need to get, the training you need to get through. Sometimes you may have to do two of those. And then finally, the last step is to actually operate with a mentor or with a proctor. We have a list of proctors who can come and help with these procedures. So they watch you and help you do the procedures. You have to get through 5 or 6. So all depends on how much time you are dedicating in the initial training and how quickly you can make it happen with the rest of your work and life.
What clinical changes are there for the rest of the surgical team when it comes to the robotic assist procedures, including the nurses? What sort of changes are there for the whole team?
So being able to use the robot is similar to learning to use any new instrument. It's a very technically advanced instrument, and it involves a lot of training for the theater staff and for the nurses. We're allowed to take an assistant with us for the training, so you can pick whoever would assist you for the surgery can go with you. But the rest of the team is thoroughly trained, and again, it takes weeks and weeks of training for them as well. But we get plenty of help from the company to organize that training.
And what about the amount of time for the procedure? Are there any sort of significant differences in the length of time?
So any new process takes longer than what you are used to doing. At the start, when people did open hysterectomy, they would do a procedure in 45 minutes, whereas laparoscopic was taking them about 2 hours. On an average, a quick swift team would take about an hour to do the traditional laparoscopic hysterectomy, whereas a new starting team would take two and a half hours to do a robotic hysterectomy. But with time, it gets quicker, and we can pretty much match the time of the traditional laparoscopic hysterectomy once everyone knows what they're doing.
It's a wonderful amount of information you've been able to share today, but now I have the great pleasure of introducing a little segment we like to call the checkup. Well, this is the fun part of our chat. This is where we get to find out a little bit more than we already have to the medical professional. We get to find out about you, the person. I've got 5 quick-fire questions. First answers. Don't overthink the answer too much. Let's find out how we go. You ready?
Sure. Yes.
All right. What's your favorite meal?
Indian street food.
Oh, do you have a particular favorite?
There's a North Indian street food called Chole Bhature that's available in Delhi. I really miss the type we get over there. So this time when I went after 6 long years, that's the one that I ate the most. And you never eat it at home, you eat it on the street.
Oh, the best way to have it. How would you describe your handwriting?
I would say it's getting from bad to worse.
That way.
Downhill. The more experienced you become, the worse the handwriting gets.
All right. Well, that normally ties in with the next question. How many coffees a day would you normally consume?
Oh, when I'm working, about 4. I would like to cut it down to 2 if I can.
Not going to happen, though.
Doesn't look like it.
All right. This is an interesting one. How accurate do you think is Grey's Anatomy? Or any medical television show, perhaps?
Fairly accurate, I think.
Yeah.
There is always a little bit of exacerbation. In one of the serials I saw that a baby was taken out of a mother's abdomen, operated on, put back inside the abdomen. I thought that was a bit bizarre.
Well, that's pretty interesting. All right, last question. If you weren't a doctor, what would you be?
An astronaut. I have always dreamt of being an astronaut since I was 6 or 7. I would have definitely been working in the NASA as an astronaut.
Wow. I wasn't expecting that answer, but a great answer nonetheless. Ritu, thank you so much for joining us on Smarter.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
For our listeners at home, in the car, or having a well-deserved break between patients, thank you so much for tuning in today. We'll see you next time on Smarter.